Hi, I'm Renee.
And I'm Anthony. We are the voices and founders of Blue Soul Earth, where we teach and we lead workshops and retreats about heart-centered living and unity consciousness.
Welcome to Blue Soul Chats, a podcast that bridges science and spirituality. We combine esoteric wisdom and the experiences that people have had for millennia and beyond with the latest breakthroughs in science, health, cosmology, physics, and the arts.
In each episode, you'll tune into cutting-edge visionaries who are making a powerful dent in consciousness from different industries and cultures around the world.
Our interviews cross boundaries and at times break conventional thinking as we redefine what reality is, what spirituality means, and what consciousness does.
Your journey to connecting to your higher self, expanding your awareness, and deepening your consciousness starts here.
Welcome, welcome. We are here today with Dr. Paul Mills, Professor of Psychiatry, and Reverend Tiffany Barsotti, an internationally renowned medical intuitive, among other things. And we're going to have a chat today about consciousness, about their professions and how they weave in consciousness to what they do and on the medical and the healing side. But before we get started, I want to just read a little bit about their impressive bios because they're quite extensive. So I'll just do a little summary here. But Paul is a professor of psychiatry in the behavioral medicine program at UC San Diego. He's also a professor of family medicine and public health and director of the Center of Excellence for Research and Training in Integrative Health. The goal of the center is to advance the investigation of integrative health approaches and the integration of effective approaches in healthcare. And then in our recent exchanges, we learned that he has a recent paper on gratitude, which is just great, right, for our audience, because that's a great segue into the spiritual world, as gratitude is the number one thing, right, that the ancient sages, mages, and spiritual teachers across time talk about. Yeah. And then Reverend Tiffany Barsotti is an internationally renowned medical intuitive, spiritual healer, clinician, and researcher of subtle energy and biofield therapies. She's also a visiting scholar at the University of California's San Diego School of Medicine and has contributed to prominent integrative medicine journals and books on topics of integrative medicine, consciousness studies, and the human biofield. And jointly, you've been, you've taught at Propello, you've at the Science of Consciousness Conference, the Chopra Center for Wellbeing, and beyond. And I don't know if you know that, but also one of our favorite conferences, the SAN Conference.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Science and non-duality. We've been going for about 12 years now.
Ah, yeah. We miss it. We haven't been in a while.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't met because
I'm surprised.
Yeah, we've been going for a long, long time, and also interviewed Maurizio over the years and covered some of their speakers. So, So it's great to have you here. Very impressive bios, and there's a whole bunch more that we'll be posting at the end. I'll start with you, Paul. Somewhere in one of these many impressive bios, it says that despite your academic and science background, you've always maintained a deep commitment to spiritual training. And we're just curious, was there a catalyst for it? And if so, what was it?
Yeah, there really was indeed a catalyst, a couple in some fashions. One, when I was very young, I was sensitive to nature and had a sense that there was more to the world beyond just the physical world. And when I was in high school, I was taught transcendental meditation. And one of my very first meditations while practicing it, actually outside under an oak tree in a field, I found myself out of my body, looking down on myself, meditating. Now, it's not something I'd ever had, never knew about. I was raised Catholic. We never talked about such things. And that was really the beginning. So that experience led me to want to become a scientist, actually, because I wanted to learn about human potential.
Now, when you went into the world of medicine, there was nothing, there was no spirituality whatsoever that's integrated into medicine. How did you integrate it yourself personally?
There were some challenges, you know, because I ended up in a deeply materialistic institution. Mm-hmm. And I was conducting research within that school of medicine, which really was a biomedical model, reductionistic. So in some ways, I'd say, yeah, I kind of suffered by just having to keep that part of myself offline in that setting. But then I would cultivate it when I could. Go to retreats at monasteries. Of course, I kept my meditation practice going. And that's how I got through it. And then my career managed to change a bit later, where there became more receptivity to consciousness. The whole field of integrated medicine started. And that was an opening for me to begin to talk about these things.
That was after you moved to UC San Diego?
Yes, that was later in my career at UC San Diego, probably about 25 years into it. Wow. I started that Center of Excellence for Research and Training in Integrative Health. Yeah, and then there I could study meditation. I met Deepak Chopra. We started a collaboration, and that led into studying the consciousness piece within integrated medicine. So I really felt then, it wasn't until later in my career that I was able to circle back to the reason why I even got into science.
Yeah, and it was really lucky that you met someone like Deepak too at that time. I think part of the challenge that we see with a lot of people that we know in this work, that they've had to stay hidden and not really come out with what they feel. Where's the data, right? Where's the data points? Can you prove this? You know, especially from the materialist perspective. So I think, you know, what was great about your career from this perspective is that you had the qualifications in the academic background, right? And credibility at that point to kind of move forward with your work.
I just wanted to, again, thank both of you for being here, because again, integrative medicine is so important, especially to anybody going on any type of spiritual journey and wants to know a little bit more. It was an integrative doctor that literally saved my life when I was in the Bronx and I was going through this. I had nothing left, but it was through integrative medicine that really allowed me to balance my energies to be where I am at this point. So it's so very important to everybody. There's not just one path. There are many other paths that you can take.
And you do not want to be going through a Kundalini awakening in the Bronx. I mean, you can help it.
No, not at all. So
no.
I'd like to hear that story. Yeah, well,
for another time.
Okay. I'll take you up on that.
Tiffany, I'm curious, how did you guys meet? I mean, we'll go back to your background, but I'm kind of curious how you met, and then we'll circle back to how you started.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. So our respective fields sort of brought us together. We physically met at the UCSD campus at University of California at San Diego. Paul was a part of it was the Center for Integrative Medicine's kickoff. It was like the inauguration. Mm-hmm. And I was invited to be there by friends, and at the time was co-running a subtle energy lab. And the lab focused on non-invasive methods of being able to give people feedback for what was going on. So this also looking at the integrative piece, when we work with people in a non-invasive way, what else can we learn? And so my lab mate invited Paul to the lab. And then so our paths crossed again. And then we had a spiritual experience when we were in that interaction.
I think this is the first time us interviewing a couple. So this is
we kind of had something like that as well, but I'm interested. What was
fantastic. So you want to say that part?
Good. I'll get it started.
Please.
So what happened was, yes, I met Tiff at the lab where she was working, and we chatted a bit, and she showed me the equipment. And then when we were saying goodbye, I reached out to shake her hand. You know, nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. When my hand touched her hand, I instantly became enveloped in this light, which was just pure love. And I called it a divine love at the moment, because I had never experienced anything like that with a human being. I never even knew it was possible. And so Tiff had an experience too, she could share. And then I went on my way and Tiffany went on her way. And then I reached out a few weeks later. Hey, can we have coffee together? I had this experience. I need to speak with you about it. I want to know what went on for you. And that's how it started on my side. Mm-hmm. How about you, Tiff?
So in that hand touch, all I could feel is my heart going into a different dimension. It just opened in such a way I hadn't felt before. I have had heart opening experiences, and this was different. And it was something different. It was not like an Eros love, like a love at first sight kind of thing. This was Paul used the perfect word, enveloped in love. It was a divine love moment. It was this beautiful. So we built a beautiful friendship because neither one of us knew that it was actually going to become a personal love. Mm-hmm. And so it was really this lovely development of a grace that we got to share an exchange of experiences, of just getting to know each other. And then we came together. So
I love that word grace. Yeah. I mean, because that kind of says it all, right?
Do you think it was literally as if two souls were recognizing each other again for a very important journey, something that you had perhaps planned that this was going to happen? And then yes. It was recognized and there was a spark.
Yes. And yeah, in fact, I've had a person, not really know Paul very well, but she was just reading my energy one day and she says, "Wow, this is really interesting. It's like a rock that was split in half by lightning, and then you are coming together in the wholeness of." So
hadn't heard that one.
I know. I
appreciate that. From my side, I would say very much yes to that. It was a recognition from prior times, because the more we've gotten to know each other over the last about 11 years, we've had, you know, deep insight into prior lives together, who we were then, what we were doing, and how what we're doing now is in many ways a kind of fulfillment to some of our intentions from then coming to now.
Yes. Yeah, I honestly believe that is happening to so many on the planet right now where, you know, I mean, we talked a little bit about channeling and we won't really be talking about that in this interview today, but only to reference that the guides that we channel will often describe it as a soul splitting in two and reunited. So it's almost like one soul is an offshoot of another soul. Now, how we could ever explain that scientifically, I have no idea, but that's kind of the visual and the downloads that we get about how that works. And you,
I think for us, it was similar because we met at our high school reunion after many, many years.
And had some electricity.
There was definitely electricity, something like this going through both of our bodies, which I had never experienced. So I can understand. When you said you shook his hand and then something.
Yeah. As you said, it wasn't this immediate love at first sight type of thing. It was something bigger, something grander. Yeah. Like you're here to do important work, and you're both doing important work, you know, and really that beautiful balancing of divine masculine and feminine. I think we should be talking to couples more often.
Yeah. And I want to say that Paul mentioned that it's a fulfillment from prior lifetimes, because we both had to do some healing around allowing this to be just in the nature of, I personally believe in reincarnation, and some of my training is past life therapy. And I was doing a lot of that at the time where we were coming together, trying to figure this out. You know, what does this mean? And, you know, all of the things that the rational mind wants to put in some sort of framework to help us understand what the heck just happened.
I think from that vantage point, you know, it's certainly important for us. That's why we're doing this, is to really bridge the gap between science and spirituality, and not to have to make people feel as if they have to choose one or the other. If they're scientific and they're credible and they've got PhDs and whatever, that they can't check off the spiritual check mark of who they are. And I think, you know, this conversation allows people to be bolder with moving forward with what, you know, the experiences that they've had, because we've all had them.
Tiffany, I'm curious, you weren't, how did you become a medical intuitive? How did that start for you? Was that something from childhood that was always there and kind of fostered it little by little?
Well, no, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I did not care for all the information I was receiving. I had my first out-of-body experience at age 7, watching my father being taken off by police and going to prison. So it was where time stood still and trying to make sense of what our lives were. But prior to that, I was having prophetic dreams. I jokingly say I had clair overwhelming. I had all the clairs. And I did.
That's good.
And I, you know, as a child, and God bless my mom, she did the best she could. She actually had a lot of Rosicrucian books and things that were really helpful for me to get lost in pictures and things that I would recognize. And I wouldn't feel crazy that I knew these things, but I just didn't know what to do with this information that was way too much for a small child to trying to be wrestling with. And I would often give people information about their health or whatever it is that I saw, you know, out of the mouth of babes, right? It's like, what's the saying, drunks and children tell the truth? So there were a lot of things, and you know, my mom would, like, you know, put her hand over my mouth a lot of times. It's just, I would say things that I didn't even know the words were, you know. An example of that was that we had a friend that had recurrent bladder infections, and I said, that's because you have too much coitus.
At age 7? Oh my goodness.
Even younger than that. I don't remember my age, but I didn't even know what that word was. And my mother would just, like, you know, cringe, like, what are you, where is this coming from?
You're embarrassing me.
Oh my God. Absolutely. And, you know, she was tapped in. So but you know, what does a young parent do with their child that just is, and I willed it away. I didn't want the job. I didn't want, when it started becoming more of, excuse me, this is something to cultivate. Tell me what to do so that I'll do the opposite, so it goes away. And that's exactly what I did do.
Yep.
And then it wasn't until I got hit by the spiritual 2x4, so-called, where I had to get on my path.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, your story in the video about, you know, after 9/11 and all of these health problems that you were having, and, you know, the intuition that came, you have 3 days to decide, you know, 3 days to decide what, right? You know, is this going to go one direction or the other direction? Or, you know, the way I took that when I listened to your video was that you have 3 days to decide whether you're going to step into your purpose or not.
You got it.
Yeah. Stop this nonsense, right? You know, we go through that with our guides too. They're like, just, you know, step into the power and do what you need to do and spread the word of love. That's really what it's about.
I understand that getting hit over the head with a 2x4.
Yeah.
And you either step into it or you're going to keep getting hit and hit, because that's kind of how it goes. And it's not an easy path sometimes, but if you have the right people around you that give you assistance, you can go on this journey. How do both of you combine your knowledge together, your science backgrounds and your spirituality now as both divine masculine, divine feminine, coming together again to heal? How are you doing that?
You begin.
Look, do you want to speak about PSI?
Sure. There's several things. Natural. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Science and spirituality coming together in the same way, but yeah. Go ahead.
Well, one of the areas we teach together in is called personal self-integration. And essentially it's a methodology to help people come into conscious contact with the richness, the depths, the wisdom of the so-called subconscious minds, and the subconscious selves and personalities. Mm-hmm. So we teach that together, and we balance each other very well, because as you know, through the work of Carl Jung, for example, there's the anima and the animus, the male and female archetypal selves. Mm-hmm. And so we present that as a balance in our work together as we go on to teach about the other selves, of which there are a handful more. It's very transformative work, and it's been very fulfilling for us to teach it together. So that's one example, but we've also written scientific papers together just on concepts around integrated medicine, concepts around bringing the transcendent consciousness nature of the human being into integrated medicine, amongst other things.
Mm-hmm. And that's through the research. So integrating some of these research findings. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, I mean, one of the things that you had mentioned, the PTSD, and I know too, Tiffany, you work with anxiety. Can you guys talk about the anxiety, the stress, the PTSD, what you're doing to try and bring people back to center and get grounded, you know, back into their kind of inner knowing of away from the fight or flight, you know, and back into that grounded, centered self?
And that's really it, Renee. What you're saying is get grounded. You know, it's like if you look at a house that doesn't have a ground to it, it's a fire risk. It's something that sparks could be going through the walls. And that sometimes is what anxiety feels like. And I personally had to deal with overcoming OCD and a lot of anxiety type issues that were going on in my life, partially because I was really suppressing who I really was, trying to do more of the fitting in. And what I find, I actually have a checklist of 21 uncommon causes of anxiety, because what I'm actually finding, the top are people being empaths or highly sensitive people that don't necessarily know the discernment between what's theirs and what somebody else's. It's like the permeability is a little too thin there. And blocked creativity is another one, where there's an inspiration that is coming through, and some people squash it because they're afraid to actually feel that energy. I have a atypical definition of anxiety, and just to put I'll say that in a moment, but the third cause is people not knowing their purpose or the reasons why they're here. And so there's this unsettled feeling. They know there's a purpose, but getting in touch with it is that's where we got to do that deeper work. And there's not many families that have taught that as a practice. There's not in society. It's not, it's just, you know, go be the robot and do the things, then make earnings and do all of these things. But the creative nature is our nature as a whole. We are creators. And so, and the last thing I'll just say to close the loop on that, how I see, and I literally see it clairvoyantly, is when a person, I'm going to use symbolism here, has anxiety, it's like a fast moving river, and it's not getting a chance for expression. So we all have this nature of energy flowing. Well, what are we doing with it? You know, our hands are an extension of the heart chakra. And you, when I say creative, it doesn't necessarily go be an artist. Creativity are business people that come up with new ideas and new ways to solve problems or interrelate in family dynamics or in your work, Anthony, in what you do. Like you, to work with another human is to be creative as well. So the classical definition doesn't fit. And I also don't find anything general about anxiety. So, and then the other side of it is the depression. So, and that's the dam to the river, like, oh, there's all this free flowing energy and what's happening with it. So
it gets blocked, you know,
and exactly.
It's like blocking all of our energy centers. Right. And then, you know, that's what ultimately leads to disease.
Yes.
So Paul, would you like to speak about that a little bit? You know, what you've learned on the medical side of it, you know, from those blockages.
Sure. Yeah. Well, for years, I did a lot of research in a field called behavioral medicine, which was a forerunner, really, of integrated medicine as we know it today. We studied a lot of the relationships of the mind, body, nervous system, immune system. That particular field is called psychoneuroimmunology. And we published endless numbers of studies looking at the effects of stress, anxiety, and depression on the body, on the cardiac system, on the hormones that run the cardiac system, on inflammatory peptides, on how our natural killer cells work in the body, and on and on. And the effects are significant. Acutely, for example, if you're just for a few moments or encountering a stressor, all those aspects of the body, nervous system, immunity mobilize, appropriately so. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, and I think that's what you're getting at, in the long time or term, we're carrying anxiety and depression, that does build up a dam, so to speak, psychically. And then the body's immune system, nervous system, and so forth mm-hmm. begins to reflect that in many adverse ways, chronic inflammation, overly activated sympathetic nervous system, high levels of catecholamines and cortisols in the blood and the urine and on and on. So that is one way I've seen that in my research.
So you're actually testing that in a multiple different ways, it sounds like, in the blood and the urine and, you know, behavioral.
Yeah. Yeah, at the university, I started a what's called a biomarker lab. So all of the different kinds of fluids we would take from our research study subjects or patients, blood, urine, saliva, we would then put those samples in the lab and make all the measurements you were just referring to. And then we would tie that data back to the person's psychosocial work or their clinical profile. And that was work, as I said, really looking at the anxiety and depression. But then, beautifully so, along came the field of positive psychology, which I remember when that started, and I was so grateful for it, because now all of a sudden we can start studying gratitude, optimism, love, altruism. And that is a whole different scene as far as its effects on the body. And that's been documented now with just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting too, right? You know, we're sort of children of the 60s and, you know, you couldn't use these words, right? In the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, right? You know, gratitude, right? And the impact of gratitude on your physiology and your mental state of being. And it sounds like you just did a paper in 2020, right? On gratitude. Can you talk a little bit about that? One of the things that I thought was kind of funny about it, actually, you talked about the shifts in heart rate variability and the physiological response to wellness and vacation interventions. I thought that was
kind of yeah, that study. Okay. I was oriented because we've actually published maybe 10 studies on gratitude, looking at the effects of being grateful, of carrying what's often called an attitude of gratitude. We've studied it in people with chronic mental disorders, with cardiac diseases, healthy people who are undergoing a vacation or a retreat at a resort. And pretty much to say broadly, and everybody, the effects of gratitude are good. And they're very consistent. Yes, we've showed changes in how the heart functions. That particular study you just mentioned were in healthy people for the most part. But we did similar measurements in people who have cardiac disease, actually heart failure, which is often considered an end stage of cardiac disease. And gratitude journaling helped improve the heart rate variability, which typically gets worse as the disease progresses. But the gratitude journaling helps stabilize that. And it also lowered inflammatory biomarkers in these patients. And on, they've started sleeping better, had less depression, less anxiety, and so forth.
Tiffany, what do you see now as a result of gratitude? What are you seeing within the auric field or the energetic body happening now?
I love the question. Thank you. Actually, something that there's two different pieces to this. A person's field becomes more full and it changes to lighter colors, like there's less pigment. It's more pastel colors, if you will.
Less and murky? Would you say it's kind of less murky and clear?
Yeah, depending on how long a person has actually been practicing and how authentic and vulnerable they really get with that gratitude practice. And then the other thing that you and I have contemplated, but we haven't thought about or spoken about in a while, is a being of gratitude. It's almost like I don't want to call it angelic because it's something different than that, but it's a virtuous field. It's
divine.
It is definitely divine. Absolutely. And it's almost as though I'm just going to go here for a moment. It's like the spiritual hierarchy is recognizing that a person is really working to will they will, mm-hmm. to find that inner peace of gratitude, to transform whatever has been held up in the murkiness that we can shed light on. And gratitude sheds a different kind of light. And it's like we get witnessed and we are... sometimes I have seen it where it's like, oh, there's another kind of light. There's another kind of being or some sort of force that can go with that. Does that make sense?
Difficult. You said it's like something being witnessed. Who is witnessing whom?
Well, isn't that the question of the universe?
Yeah.
Could you say that? Because what it sounds like you're saying is that it's like, you're going back to who you really are.
Yeah.
The divinity of yourself, witnessing yourself again, going back to
yourself
who you truly
again.
Are. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. It's almost like your light being body is witnessing your perceived physical body.
And everything is going back to that oneness again, the wholeness.
Yeah, and if you wanted to go into the quantum piece of it, it's the participatory, but, you know, universe
amazing.
Where
yeah.
the observer effect and
right.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And you, there's a whole beautiful thing, which would be a whole other sideline conversation of the delayed choice experiment where it gets into that quantum piece, but we won't go there for that. But this energy is really, it's palpable. And when I said witness, just to close the loop on that is, like the spiritual hierarchy is watching for when we have this bloom effect. So it's like we can be noticed. Mm. And that's really how I mean that. Yeah. And yes, it is us witnessing ourselves because there is no other.
I'd like to add a piece to this gratitude and how it works and why it can lead to the kind of experience and perception that Tiff was just sharing. And what I'd say about that initially is when we started working with gratitude and we were seeing all these effects, I began to ponder, how is it working? And what became clear to me is that, and this is through personal experience, and I think anyone who does gratitude work and personally uses it, it helps us to connect to the world around us. It helps us to connect to our own self and the world around us. And therefore it begins to remove perceived barriers of separation, which gets back to what you were just saying, the non-duality piece. Deepak Chopra had said at one point, you can't have gratitude and egotism at the same time. And I think that is completely correct.
That is true, yeah.
When we carry around egotism, we're rolling ourselves off in this illusion of separation. Gratitude is a kind of antidote for that as I see it, and begins to loosen it up, that expansiveness occurs, the energy follows that you're just describing that you would perceive. Mm. And we're then having more insight into our true nature, which is back to the oneness of all things, frankly.
Interconnectedness of all things. You know, I mean, the same applies and holds true to being present, right? And all the ancient sages talk about that too, right? Gratitude and being present. And I remember one, I can't remember which spiritual teacher had said it, but it's impossible to be angry when you're in a present state, when you're in the present moment. It's almost possible to be angry or upset.
I remember we were working with a client who had cancer, and I remember the guy had asked them and said, can you find the love in your cancer?
Yeah.
Can you find that gratitude, that love, that feeling? And
he was a 40-year-old, you know, pretty well-known You probably even know him. He just passed, but a spiritual teacher and good friend of ours. And he had stage four cancer that came so quickly on his 70th birthday. And because he had done the work, you know, I was sort of hoping for one of those miraculous, right? Get coherence in the auric field and change everything around and we can do this together. Like that was me, my human self, not wanting to lose our friend. But there was a state of peace around him when the guides had said that to him. I think it was almost, I don't want to say accepting his fate, but no fear, just this sense of absolute connection to the all.
Have you, both of you, seen that working with individuals that have terminal illnesses where they do start to find gratitude and more wholeness and oneness in themselves? And do you see the disease changing a little bit, both biologically and within the auric field as well?
Well, Tiff can talk to whether the kind of the clinical outcome changes so much, but I spent a lot of years, about 10 years working in the San Diego Hospice as a volunteer. And I did see people now and again come into a great sense of peace and acceptance. Of course, many people didn't. But those who did, of course, I saw radical changes just in their sense of self, the peace they had. And even then, their state of consciousness once they had crossed over. It wasn't uncommon for people who work in hospice that after certain patients pass away, if you happen to get close to them over a period of weeks or even months, if they were in the hospice for a while, they would come back and do a little visitation afterwards to say, hello, I'm fine, thank you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I think, you know, at least from what we've observed from speaking to the energies who have, or channeling the energies that have crossed over, is that they really come back for us. They're fine. They're in this eternal state of, you know, energy, light beings once again, and they come back for our mourning and our grief.
Tiffany, what do you see in the auric field when someone is going through that, you know, the process of dying, but yet they're accepting who they are, there's gratitude, they're becoming one again? What changes are you seeing?
A couple of things. What I want to lead with there, as I answer you, is I've really come to, after working with so many people and also being with my family members who have been very close or at the threshold and asked also to come and witness and be there for friends who are asking for a little guidance, is the more clear we become in our everyday life path, the easier the dying process is. And I really have come to believe that the more that we can live without a lot of emotional baggage or regrets or things or living in the past, it sounds so obvious, but it's really that people have far less baggage to unpack right before they're dying, and therefore can be present for the experience for what's taking place in their physical changes, because it's just a morphing. You're going from one reality to a different association of energy. And the easier we can make that journey for ourselves, what a gift we're giving to ourselves the entire life through, then, you know, to find that forgiveness and all of that. And the couple ways I want to answer your direct question, Anthony, is there's a device I use called the BioWell. It's a Russian medical device. And I have measured people 2 weeks before dying. And I had previous measurements on these people, and they were like, you know, the energy was not so great. It was kind of up and down, really jagged, you know, things like that. And then 2 weeks before dying, this woman, she was not physically feeling all that well. She knew that there was something really serious. But then 2 weeks later, doing a whole bunch of blood work, she had this surge of energy. So I had 2 weeks worth of BioWell data and blood work and all of this stuff to be able to look at. And she looked like a 27-year-old healthy woman that had nothing wrong. But what it was this surge of energy to be able to make the preparation for her for dying. So I learned something so hugely magnificent from that woman, thank you, that now when I see that surge of energy from a person, I've worked with people that have had multiple stages of cancer recurrence or things like that. And now that I know what I'm seeing, not just with clairvoyantly, but also taking physical measurements using this device, I can have a different kind of dialogue with them. I can say, can we have the conversation about how you feel about dying? Are you at peace? What needs to be done in this period of time? And so it's a hugely vulnerable conversation. I don't always want to have that conversation, but sometimes I feel that if I'm given that information, I'm given it for a reason. And I have to stick my neck out in order to make this present, knowing what I know now. That's what I would say. So there's both an expansion and a contraction of the field.
An expansion and a contraction of the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is interesting because a lot of times as we're nearing death, right, and same with all the stories and the case studies we've read over the years, right, they're, you know, are you in this place of fear or are you in this place of peace with it, right? Because we go through, so many people fear death. That's the thing they fear the most. And then those who are so-called awake are going through this non-dual experience and connection to the all, they don't fear death, right? And so that's kind of the shift that you see in our waking bodies, that we don't actually fear death once we go through this expansiveness that you're talking about, this experience.
Let me ask both of you an interesting question now, both from a scientific and spiritual perspective. Who are we? Where are we exactly? What is this? What are we experiencing and why? What's going on?
Want me to try?
Yeah, and then I have something to give you for that you've actually written about, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, all right, I'll begin, then Tiff can chime in too. Yeah. So who are we? Well, as you know, just based on everything you've said so far, we are eternal, unchanging awareness. Mm. Period. Okay. That is our true nature. But awareness, we as awareness have brought forth the creation of consciousness itself. And all that we see within the totality of the universe is that one singular consciousness appearing in a multitude of forms. Mm. Yep. So we've decided as awareness, let's affiliate ourselves with one of those forms of this time and this place. This form's called a human body. And so we're residing in that and having the experience of being in this temporal dimension, this beautiful planet we call Earth, of course, and these bodies are remarkable. And that's really the answer. And unfortunately, most people during the course of their lives forget who and what they really are and become fully identified with the mind-body system itself. But as you've said, and we spoke about conferences we've all attended, there are ways to wake up back to that identity as pure awareness, pure being, and maintain that every moment for the rest of our lives. That's my answer. Tiff?
Well, and community helps too, right? When you can be together with other beings who don't think you're crazy, you know, connect with that notion of oneness, right? And feed your auric field. We're feeding each other's auric field. Mm-hmm. By really exchanging love and exchanging gratitude and empathy and sympathy and compassion.
What is that pure awareness? Is there an up and a down, a good and a bad, a left and a right? What is it?
He's going down the polarity because in a linear world, I think that's where you're going. In a linear world, it's all about these polarities, whereas in a quantum universe, there is no...
I love your idea of this awareness, but what is this awareness? What is this oneness that you speak about?
My favorite word to describe the oneness, I borrow from the Indian tradition of Vedanta, which I studied for many decades. It's called Brahman. Mm. It's simply the totality of all that is.
Yep.
And beyond that, I don't think there's anything anybody could really say about it, because then we're just going into the field of concepts and the mind. Mm-hmm. The mind cannot know it.
Yep.
Mm-mm. You're starting to sound like Rupert Spira.
I'm getting he's a good friend. He's a friend. He's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a friend.
I'm anyway, we know him.
Yeah.
So yeah, but Tiff.
So carbon-based saltwater bag units, or what is
that? Oh, from Star Trek.
Star Trek. Well, I was trying to remember that.
Carbon-based units.
Carbon-based units of salt water.
There's another one, though. Hang on. Ugly sacks of mostly water.
Mostly water.
That's from Star Trek, too.
Yes, that's right.
So my take is, I absolutely agree with what Paul was just saying, and it is the journey of this eternal consciousness of this force of creation seeking to experience itself in these many forms. And it experiences us by having all of these creative experiences, all kinds of experiences. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we equate suffering with something that's really awful, but really it's a portal to get to the next place we're supposed to get to. And there's so much, I want to use the word grace again, that if we can just allow ourselves to be in that grace, then we may be able to reach that more easily, of that eternal state of consciousness, and realize that the purpose, so this is another question you asked as well, like, what is all of this about, is to experience the experience.
Yes.
It yes. sounds like we are having our own perceptions of what our experiences are. We perceive them, and therefore they are created.
Yes.
If we are perceiving that we're having a negative experience, therefore we can change that experience if we choose.
That brings me to something I want to make sure I don't forget to bring up. And this is local and non-local consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. I know, Tiffany, you had mentioned this in some of your work, and I'm sure, Paul, you've dealt with that too over the years, right? That particular phraseology, because people call it by different things, right? So how do you see that non-local consciousness? I mean, it's interesting because one of the people that is part of this summit is Dr. Helene Weba, from who just did the science of channeling. Mm-hmm. And in our chat with her, she did use, you know, this language of non-local consciousness in her studies. And so I'm curious, you know, because obviously from, you know, a channeling perspective, when she was talking about the science of channeling, there is this non-local consciousness that you access. Spiritual people call it the Akashic Records or the Akash, you know, and different people call it by different names. So what is it for you when you're, because you had said, you know, I think you said exactly on your page that there's different content within these fields around us. The healing journey happens within the context of these fields.
In some ways, it's an and both, that there's a local and non-local present at the same time. I don't think we can really decouple that. It's part of the being observed. And I really see that as being sort of a morphing of two sides of the same coin. There's things that we could seek to make conscious. And then we're now, the mind might want to be putting concepts around it. But if the mind has been trained that we don't need to necessarily conceptualize, but lovingly accept what's happening, the information, it doesn't have to be filled with resistance. Like there's some things when I lovingly call things that I walk into in people's fields, plasma balls. It's like these little balls of things that have a lot of content to them. Eileen McCusick, who's another friend and creator that works with Chamonix and mm-hmm. and group, she's the creator of Biofield Tuning. She, when you put a tuning fork in these things, it vibrates mm-hmm. differently. Well, when you put your hand in it, it vibrates differently as well. So our field collects this information from local and non-local experiences. So once again, I don't think that you can necessarily decouple them. Now, we can also train ourselves, and you guys know this very, very well, being in the channeling world. Where is it that you are seeking to put your consciousness in order to access information? there's just a field. Some people do call it the Akashic. I'm fine with that. There's just a totality of every thought that's ever been thought exists. And we want to be cautious about what it is that we put in our fields, because we can make deposits and going back and revisiting them and detangling them if we need to or whatever with our consciousness, then we can focus in order to help make those significant changes for ourselves. I strongly believe all healing is self-healing.
The energy will say it's a frequency match.
Yes.
Resonance. Yes.
Resonance and frequency. Or, you know, what Joe Dispenza calls, I guess, and Bruce Lipton also calls coherence.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's both, actually. Because you can, resonance is a neutral type of thing, right? Resonance can both make you sick and make you well. So there's a neutrality that's there. And then our work, if there's something that is out of balance or out of coherence, what is the resonant thing, idea, form, thought form, whatever else that is, that what is that resonant frequency, no matter what it is, can come in and help to resolve and create coherence again. But, you know, balance isn't one of these things, or coherence isn't one of these things that we achieve like a diploma and put it on our wall. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned Eileen, because we're going to be talking to her too. And I just finished her latest book. I couldn't put it down, you know, and she had talked about when she was first experimenting with the field, how she accidentally realized that, oh, 6 feet away, there's something going on here. The fork is like, you know, it's responding to something. And I'm not right next to my patient. So, you know, it's interesting, right? How we experiment with this and our knowingness, right? I mean, of course, we have these tools to give us feedback, because we need that. And we need data points and we need biomarkers and we need all of this stuff. But at the same time, when we go into that inner knowing, that's when we can, you know, marry the two together and come up with the most comprehensive and effective results, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You talked about PSI, right? We talked about the personal self-integration.
Yes.
Personal self-integration.
Yeah. So the one thing I had an additional question about that is that that's sort of moving beyond the subconscious and the unconscious states. Can you go a little bit deeper with what you mean by that?
The goal is integration.
Yeah. Let me begin.
Okay. And then I'll come in. Yes.
When we're speaking about PSI, we often relay something that Carl Jung said, and he said, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will rule your life and you will call it fate.
Mm. Beautiful.
So the purpose of personal self-integration is to make the unconscious conscious, to unify what we now call the conscious and subconscious minds back into a wholeness of communication. And that's the work we support doing in each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you ever feel like you get into an argument with yourself and nobody wins.
All the time.
It's kind of a human thing. Well, we have the outer self personality. We have our high self, of course, or whatever you want to call that energy that's part of our divine matrix. And we have male self and a female self. We have a mental judge self, an astral judge self, and a body self. And this isn't just our cosmology. This is tracked for millennia.
Whether it's the Vedas or the Kabbalah, it's all the same.
It's all saying the same. And to me, that's resonant truth. And you know, Rudolf Steiner talked to that there about there being 9 selves. And then in this system, we're looking at 7, which is plenty. And the goal is, talk about coherence, is an internal and external cooperation with the self. Mm-hmm. Because if we move forward with creative ideas, the chance to sabotage it happens when we don't have our subconscious selves buy-in about what we're doing, because there's some fear or there's something emerging that may scare the crap out of that aspect of ourselves. Getting into a relationship with someone, you know, it's just, you know, one, the male self or the female self may be saying, yeah, I've been there, done that, don't need to do that again. So there's a decision, you know, like, okay, I'm sitting this one out. Well, that's not going to work in a real loving situation where you really need all hands on deck and all selves to be present for this life journey.
I just want to ask a final question for myself. From all the work that you've been doing from the past and now to the present moment, do you see humanity more coherent, more unified, more in touch with the higher self, the oneness, than, as you know, as we've been in the past? Where do you think we're headed?
You first.
I would say that I do see a change, an improvement for the better, for the capacity of a human being to get into these states, to pursue them, to successfully embrace them.
Yes.
Is all of humanity choosing to do that? No. But those who want to do it, we spoke about the will earlier, those who want to engage their will to really awaken themselves, it's an easier capacity to start taking those steps and crossing those thresholds than there has been in the past. I've seen that again and again. But we also know that many people aren't choosing that, and they're choosing to stay back in these states of separation, judgment, on and on. Where that's going to lead us ultimately, I don't know. But that's how I've been perceiving it. How about you?
I really feel strongly that we are moving into what I'm calling the age of grace. And it's a personal choice, of course, because it does take work. It takes presence. It takes consciousness. And this isn't some spiritual bypassing kind of purple washing type of journey. This is a real opportunity to have embodied ascension. I believe we have full capability of doing that as humanity, and it will take some transformation and some transfiguration in order to make our bodies, I'm going to use a term that Barbara Marx Hubbard coined, the homo luminous body, which I really liked. It's this fullness of being able to, we don't have to operate so much out of contrast or in, yes, we still live in a polar universe. I'm not necessarily saying as we move to the age of grace, but it's almost like we're coming out of the mouth of the snake of the Ouroboros and starting to come out of this 26,000 year cycle where we can emerge with more wholeness, with more freedom and knowledge of self, and really what the heck we're doing here in order to add to the greater good. And like Paul was saying, not everybody's choosing that journey. And it's all good, because from a person that is more operating from grace, there's no judgment. There's an equanimity of just a pure loving acceptance that, okay, you are where you are. There's nobody being made wrong if you're not there yet. And there's waves of consciousness.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to put it. I love that analogy. I mean, we put it into somewhat buckets, right? Like, are you plugging into the fear grid or are you plugging into the love?
That's right.
You know, that's really what it comes down to at the end of the day. But I do think that even if not everyone's on board, you know, 1% can move mountains. I mean, look at what 1% can do for the environment, for example,
right?
So, you know, we really only need that small percentage of movement. And I think the exponential growth thing, right? Ray Kurzweil talks about that in the singularity, you know, that exponential growth that's kind of happening, because there's conversations like this happening more and more all over the globe. And it's not just, you know, these conversations, it's also people meditating together for the betterment of Gaia, you know, people meditating together for the betterment of, you know, political structures, right? And things that are happening around the world, what's happening in Russia, There's group meditations around this. So I think that's, you know, not necessarily the only key or the only answer, but the fact that collectively we're coming together and saying, I care enough about this, and the collective consciousness of the whole is definitely going to have an impact.
Agreed.
Indeed. If I can add something, this idea of human beings deciding to go forward or not, this great Indian teacher, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, he was fond of saying that to get on that journey, it really needs two things. One is self-love, and the other is really an earnestness, a continued earnestness to stay on the path and find your way there. Those two things will get everyone there, whoever wants to pursue the path of self-awakening, really, back to the knowledge of the whole.
I always see humanity as becoming better and more gentle and kinder and more loving than ever before, than just 100 years ago. We see it happening every day. We see it in our science. We see it in our cultures. And so I really believe that science and spirituality, they are both uniquely connected to each other. And as one advances, so does the other. And that's how we are as a human species.
Yeah. That's true. And Paul's book is actually on the one that he's writing right now on this topic of scientists having their spiritual journey and what brought them to science. You should speak about it more than me, but this
That would be great. I was just going to say, you know, before we wrap, is there anything else that you'd like to add? We would love to hear a little bit about your book.
Sure. Just wrapping up a book where I've interviewed scientists from around the United States and a few outside of the US about their spiritual lives. They're sharing with me really deep, intimate, transpersonal, metaphysical, mystical experiences they had, whenever they had them, when they were younger, when they were older, how that, of course, in addition to influencing how that changed their understanding of their own nature and the world, but also how did that impact their science and how does it impact their science, on and on. So the book is on this theme. I'm sharing all this information, basically the spiritual life of scientists and how that is changing science as we know it. Returning science back as a spiritual path.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. If there's anything else that you'd like to add, I don't know, Tiffany, if you're working on anything that you like people to know about.
Always, yes. Actually, Paul and I will be teaching the personal self-integration work. We do this as a group. It's incredibly transformative in that way. And we're going to be kicking that off at the end of April, April 24th. So, and that's, you can find information on the Heal and Thrive website. It's an invitation only course because we need to make sure that people are really ready to go to these places, but we're happy to have conversations. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other resources that are also on our website, and free grounding and clearing meditation and anything that we can do to impart knowledge and wisdom and help people on the journey to figuring it out. We're all about.
Thank you so much for taking
It's been fun.
Out of your day. I know, to have this really amazing dialogue with us today. Just fabulous. We love your work. We love your energy. It's amazing to see the two of you together. Mm-hmm. Paul, that was a great idea. You know, it was a great idea because initially we were just going to talk to you, and he's like, well, hang on. I've got this other person in my life who we work together on a lot of different things. And I, you know, I just personally have loved seeing the beautiful blend of both of you.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's beautiful energy. Yeah.
Well, and for you as well, this is it's a match. So there's resonance in that for sure.
There's resonance.
It takes one to know one. And really want to just thank you for your work. I've been through your website. We've been through your website, and you're really helping people to be able to see that there's so much more. And I hope to be on one of these transformational journeys of travel at some point in the future as well.
Yeah.
Well, we do hope to lead some sacred retreats to Peru, Israel, Egypt, south of France. So I don't know.
South of France. We would go there with you.
Yeah.
Hey, all right. I'll
keep Magdalene tours. Yes.
So thanks everyone for joining us today, and take a look at the following pages to find out more about Paul and Tiffany's work. And we'll see you on the other side.
You've been listening to Blue Soul Chats, a podcast that bridges science and spirituality. You can learn more about our work at bluesoulearth.com, studywithspirit.com, and bluesoulmedia.com.
Also, head over to bluesoulsummit.com, where you can watch video interviews, each season tackling a particular topic. We are also at Blue Soul Earth on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Clubhouse.
Join us for a future episode of Blue Soul Chats, where we hope to ignite your soul's journey, expand your awareness, and deepen your consciousness.
Thanks for being here, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and listen to previous episodes in our library.